Okay, so as I said, I'm Lindsay Goldman. I'm from the New York Academy of Medicine, which is an independent organization that's been around since 1847, works to improve the health of people in cities. We focus on healthy aging and creating environments that promote healthy and active aging, eliminating health disparities, the prevention of chronic diseases, and the preservation of the history of public health. We are also the WHO's collaborating center on aging, urbanization, and globalization, and the Secretariat of Age-Friendly New York City, which is a partnership with the New York City Council and the Office of the Mayor to improve the well-being of older adults through changes in policies, practices, and programs. So today I'm going to share the findings and recommendations from our one-year study of older adults in disasters with a special focus on Hurricane Sandy. I didn't have any relationships to disclose. This research was funded by two private foundations, the New York Community Trust and the Altman Foundation. I'm going to start with some demographics, just so you get a sense of who we're talking about here. Older people comprise 17.4% of the total population in New York City. 59% are female, 25% are employed, 26.5% have difficulty with mobility and self-care, 58% live in Brooklyn or Queens, 55% rent, 30% live alone, and 15.5% are poor. The older population is growing and will increase by 50% over the next 20 years, with the oldest of the old growing the fastest. And under ordinary circumstances, the majority of these community-dwelling older people live independently with little need for support. This means that they are likely not connected to many of the robust services that we have in place for older people in the city. This is a map of community-dwelling older people overlaid with the 6 evacuation zones in New York City. The evacuation zones tend to have more older people, higher levels of poverty, disability, and people who don't speak English. New York is a very diverse city. 55% of older people were born outside of the United States, and 28% speak English less than very well. We often have these very large ethnic enclaves where it may be okay for people not to speak English because all of the businesses and resources around them are provided in their primary languages. But then we have little pockets of linguistically isolated people. For example, if you can see in the top right-hand corner amid all of that pinkish-purple that represents Spanish-speaking people, in East Harlem we have a small concentration of Chinese-speaking people. 80% of older people in New York City receive some kind of rent subsidy. And most of the buildings that exist for older people were built in evacuation zones. The majority of them are very tall high rises, sometimes up to 25 stories, that have elevators. And people may be fine living in them under ordinary circumstances when there is electricity and heat and all of those elevators, all of the amenities they rely on. So within this context, we've had multiple disasters over the last 13 years, starting with the attacks on 9/11. We had a blackout in 2003. We've had two significant heat waves. In 2011, we had Hurricane Irene. And finally, in 2012, we had Hurricane Sandy, where 25 of the 44 deaths were people who were over 60. And tens of thousands of people were trapped in high-rise buildings and private homes without access to food, water, medication, medical attention, et cetera, et cetera. And what we saw during Hurricane Sandy was unfortunately very similar to what we saw in all of these previous disasters. So we know that the population of older people is increasing. We know that the frequency and severity of weather events will continue to occur in our region. And so the question is not if, but when is the next disaster and what are we going to do about it? So this research came out of a convening that we were asked to do by the Assistant Secretary of Preparedness and Response. We brought together healthcare leadership to determine what were the immediate post-storm research priorities to be undertaken. We started by convening an Older Adults and Disasters Policy Advisory Committee. This was a multi-sector, public-private group of people who provided guidance at every step of the process. We conducted a literature review. We looked at the data collected immediately after and several months down the road after Hurricane Sandy, and that included data from canvassing operations as well as data from the FEMA-funded crisis counseling program and the FEMA-funded disaster case management program. We conducted key informant interviews, we conducted focus groups, and we mapped areas of large concentrations of older people. So what does the literature say? Two things. First, and not surprisingly, that older people may be more vulnerable in disasters because they are more likely to have mobility or cognitive impairment, they often have chronic health conditions, they may have diminished sensory awareness, they may not be able to smell spoiled food or taste spoiled food, they may not be able to see in unfamiliar environments or when it's dark. They are prone to social isolation as well as financial limitations. Many live on fixed incomes. But the other piece of the puzzle that most people don't really think about and is never portrayed in the media when you see these images of poor older people suffering cold and hungry is that older adults may actually be more psychologically resilient than younger people in disasters, in that there's something called the inoculation hypothesis, which says that your increased life experience may have some kind of a protective value. And so this is sort of encapsulated in this quote from one of our focus group participants who said, I wasn't afraid of what could happen worse than what had already happened. I accomplished a few things, I helped a few people. This is how she sort of put the event in perspective. So we wanted to know what older New Yorkers had to say. So we went into five communities that were seriously affected by the storm, and we partnered with community-based organizations to recruit participants. We had two different kinds of focus groups. One was for older people who had been affected by the storm, people who were 60 plus, and one for frontline responders, which we defined as people of any age who assisted older people before, during, and after the storm, but were not part of the official formal emergency management sector. So we're talking about social workers and pharmacists and building service workers like porters and maintenance men and volunteers and people from faith-based organizations, those kind of people. We conducted the focus groups in English, Mandarin, and Spanish, and if we had had more money and time, we would have done Russian as well. We spoke to 81 older people and 57 frontline responders. So here are our findings. First, the importance of social networks in influencing older people's decisions around whether to stay or go. There was a mandatory evacuation in many parts of the city, and most people chose to shelter in place. These decisions were often made around not only the older person's understanding of his or her own needs, but also the relationships that that older person had in the home and outside of the home. But people who had stronger and more numerous social connections were more likely to report having had their needs met, versus people who had fewer or weaker social connections were more likely to say that they had felt abandoned. And this was often because people became separated from their social networks due to disruptions in transportation and communication, and also because older people used fewer modalities of communication during Hurricane Sandy. They were more likely to rely exclusively on landlines. And so, as you see in this quote, here's a person who is only Chinese speaking. She relies on her neighbors for all of her information, and her neighbors all left. So she had no idea what was going on. Very difficult to maintain situational awareness when older people were separated from their networks. Because older people hadn't been adequately engaged in emergency planning, a lot of the services that were designed to assist people who had been affected by the storm were just inaccessible or inappropriate for older people. So for example, here at the bottom, you see a picture of a shelter. The shelters were often inaccessible, uncomfortable, and unsafe. Some of that was perception, and some of it was based on the reality of experiences older people had during Hurricane Irene. If you look at the other picture, that is a food truck line. Older people were not given priority on these lines. They weren't given any place to sit. And often we heard that the food trucks would stop to deliver the food and not wait long enough for the older people to be served. Older people were, though, pretty creative in partnering with each other so that one would, like, stand at the window and one would stand at the door, and they developed a mechanism for obtaining the food in these circumstances. But generally, there was a lack of planning to maintain the health status of older people, and as a result, we saw the exacerbation of chronic conditions as well as the emergence of new conditions that mostly resulted from interruption in medication management and home care, as well as the loss of durable medical equipment. Older adults very actively supported their communities. I told you there were two focus groups, one for older adults and one for frontline responders. But it turns out there was somewhat of an arbitrary distinction between these two groups because we had many frontline responders who were over 60, and we had many people over 60 who played critical roles in the response, including one woman who was in her mid to late 80s and on oxygen. As in most disasters, most people were assisted by friends and family, and 73% of the responders were local. A lot of people made the conscious decision to shelter in place, thinking that they would be of assistance to their neighbors. The local organizations, even those that had been in some way compromised by the storm, were very effective in meeting the needs of their communities because they understood exactly what the needs were, what languages needed to be spoken. This is actually a picture of the Midland Avenue Neighborhood Relief Center, which was started by an older man on the site of where his house was standing. Now it's a tent, and they were distributing supplies. But the organizations that responded said that their biggest challenges were a lack of integration into the city's emergency plan, as well as a lack of coordination. And in many cases, organizations spoke about being called upon to do things that they really did not have the capacity to do. So for example, the human service organizations were really on the front lines of the response, but yet what people needed were access to medications and medical attention. So it's not a coincidence that after all of these disasters, we've seen the same set of circumstances emerge, and this is because we've invested so much time, money, and energy into individual preparedness initiatives, primarily go bags and checklists, which we know there are a lot of barriers for older adults to comply with because it's all about, you know, buying a lot of stuff and storing a lot of stuff and carrying a lot of stuff, and it's mostly just about the accumulation of stuff. And, you know, if you buy all the recommended stuff that's supposed to last you for, let's say, 3 to 5 days, what happens on the 6th day? What happens on the 28th day? What happens 6 months down the line when you still don't have power, which is what we saw in parts of New York City? And so while individual preparedness is certainly a critical step, and no one would dispute the value of owning water and flashlights, it's not the only piece of the puzzle here. And our research has indicated that regardless of the possible disaster scenarios, and it is impossible to predict the severity or duration of any given disaster, communities need to develop the capacity to respond to rapidly changing conditions. So, our overall takeaways. The best predictor of how a community will respond to and recover from a disaster is how that community functioned prior to a disaster. And so we need to strengthen the social infrastructure with the community rather than the individual as the primary point of intervention. And we need to include older people at every step of the way in that process. We need to ensure that emergency preparedness is not relegated to the Office of Emergency Management or the Department for the Aging, whatever you may call it in your locality, but rather it's everybody's issue, and so we need to integrate preparedness into routine services, systems, and activities of daily life. And so this is most important when we think about efforts to promote financial security and health literacy among older people, which we don't traditionally see as disaster preparedness, but we know that, in fact, if we connect people to all of the various benefits and entitlements they may be eligible for, they will be better positioned to withstand a disaster. When we think about the role of primary care in disaster preparedness as a key component of any kind of routine care visit, if a doctor is prescribing a medication, it's a really important conversation for that doctor to have with an older person to say, you know, here's how you take this medication, but here's what will happen if you don't take this medication because for whatever reason, you know, your pharmacy is destroyed. How many days can you go? What should you do? People will not respond to messaging from public authorities unless they understand how they will be personally affected. And in the case of older people, disasters often present as a health crisis. And the other thing that I want to add is that we need to ensure that when we're making plans and responding to disasters, that efforts to preserve the public safety do not inadvertently negatively impact the public health. And so all of the requisite services and systems that are needed to keep older people safely in the community, for example, home health care, need to be considered when developing emergency plans. We have 12 recommendations that I won't go through, but I have all of our report summaries, and I have one copy of the report, and I would really prefer not to take them home, so please take them, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. But I will say that we've seen quite a bit of traction in terms of adopting a community resilience approach, especially in the housing realm, and so I do have something good to report. I don't want to end on such a bad note.
Okay, thank you.